You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening. I'm Al Voner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So nice to have you with us. Once again, I'm stretching my historical chops, as they say. I've came across another great book this year about a former American president, someone that may not be a household name to many of you, but has gone down in the annals of U.S. history as one of the great presidents. And yet, his upbringing, his struggles as an individual, not overly wealthy by any means, didn't come from a lot of wealth, didn't come from folks that had a very rich history, as some do, and yet rose to the ranks to become a very well-respected, not only a politician, but an individual, a negotiator, and then eventually a president. And we're talking about Martin Van Buren. And my guest is the author and educator, Jim Bradley. Jim, nice to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Al. Good to be with you.
Was I clear, Jim? I just want to get a sense, because this is what these are the things I took away after reading your book. I'm saying to myself, wow, this guy was, in upstate New York at a time when, it wasn't like New York was, New York City wasn't what it was. We didn't have big cities. This guy didn't have a lot of money. Martin Van Buren did not have a lot of money. His family did not have a lot of money. Most people in that era basically worked the land and hoped to carve out a niche and be able to provide for their family, as Van Buren did. And yet, what was it that was so unique? I just found something about him, and I would have to say personal drive, perseverance. Were those correct characteristics?
Absolutely. He had confidence. He had audacity that I would just say was next level. Where did all that come from? I like to think it was his mother, because considering his background, and we know that Dutch families were considered generally matriarchal, and she seems to have been a strong-willed woman who really encouraged her sons to go far in this world. They all became attorneys. One was elected to Congress. They all held distinguished positions in New York, and one became president of the United States. So there was that. It all starts in the home for him. It was being in this house with a strong woman who encouraged the best in him. And then on top of that, there's the larger world of upstate New York, and how this is right at the conclusion of the American Revolution, when all of these changes are taking place in New York, where we're starting to see people of more modest background having an opportunity to participate in the political process. And he was fortunate in that he was not part of those regions of New York dominated by families like the Van Rensselaers and the Livingstons, where you couldn't own land because they owned all the land. And if you didn't own land, well, then you couldn't vote. So his father could vote because he owned a small patch of land in this town called Kinderhook, which is about 20 miles south of Albany. So all of these opportunities allowed him to have some say in the political process. His son was able to get a legal education, and at that time, lawyers were emerging as a big force in New York society, and I think they've been a big force ever since. So it was just this combination of factors of being in the right place at the right time and having this powerful drive and ambition made him really soar in New York politics in the early 19th century.
I'm glad you noted, because I got the same sense that New York, even though we just came out of out of the war, we now found our independence. New York was, most people think, oh, it wasn't it just all happening around D.C. and where the White House was and the new president was sitting? No, parts of the country, New York being one of them, certainly was a hotbed of growth and ambition. Competition. But again, going back to Martin Van Buren, you get the sense that he wasn't a guy that wanted to take someone to task, but he always did his homework and he was well prepared so that when he made an argument, when he had to defend the client, when he had to make a point, It was done wisely. It was done with a sense of purpose, and that he did his homework. Does that sound correct?
That is correct. But I want to go back earlier to something you said about D.C. not being the center of everything. Funny story to share with you. A lot of politicians did not want to go to Washington, D.C. Sometimes people were elected to Congress. They spent one term down there, and they hated it because it was so boring, because the weather was terrible, impossibly hot in the summertime, punishingly cold in the wintertime. It was a crude, primitive city. The mosquitoes were horrific. Everybody who writes about Washington said they couldn't wait to get out of there. So you'd see somebody would serve one term in Congress, and they would rather have been a state assemblyman, because at least they would have been closer to home and among their friends and in a more hospitable environment. So nowadays, of course, people are dying to go to Washington if you're politically ambitious. That is not so much the case 200 plus years ago. As for Van Buren's personality, yes, absolutely. And it's a great contrast with his great nemesis at the time, who was DeWitt Clinton, who was someone who came from this world that Martin Van Buren despised, the world of the landed family, that kind of patrician, this sort of world of deference, where the idea was people were supposed to defer to their betters. So DeWitt Clinton was someone who was very arrogant and bossy and didactic and undiplomatic. And Van Buren was the opposite in every way. He was pleasant and affable. And when somebody said something that he disagreed with, he would just nod and say, "That's interesting," and walk away. Whereas DeWitt Clinton would say, "That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard," and start arguing with him. And then also the business about learning things. I found these stories over and over again during my research, where someone would bring up a topic in a conversation with him and he didn't know what they were talking about. And then a few days later, when someone brought it up again, he would suddenly be an expert on it. He would be up all night long reading about something. And this happened not just in casual conversations, but when he was a legislator and he had to when he was chairing a committee or something like that, and they would hold hearings over an issue, a topic he would know nothing about, he would be an expert on it 2 days later. So that's part of that drive and ambition, that he would just hit the books and just learn about things, and he could grasp things quickly and just all of a sudden emerge as someone so knowledgeable about something where he seemed utterly ignorant only a few days earlier.
Yeah, in the book, the phrase, and you have it in, you know, it's in quotation marks, and it just caught my eye. He was coined the little magician for those very reasons that you were talking about. Unlike what we see today, whether it's at the local level, state level, or even at the national level, just basic hearings on the floor of Congress. I'm not saying that they weren't heated and there weren't, you know, debates and there wasn't a lot of friction, but it wasn't Van Buren's approach. And you would think, geez, I wish we had more politicians like that today. But that was indeed, and correct me if I'm wrong, those characteristics were indeed what made him not only popular, but respected by his peers, right?
He was respected by his peers. They liked him personally. They admired and respected how he tried to bring a level of civility to congressional debates. Now, I know things are very acrimonious these days. We all see the clips that go viral of people arguing on the floor of the House. People were drawing guns in the 19th century. People were engaging in real fist fights. They had to be restrained. They were arguing about slavery. They were arguing about westward expansion. They were arguing about a wide variety of issues. And things got really, really ugly at times. And sometimes they would settle things on the dueling ground. So Van Buren really believed that by making political parties the principal engine for political expression in America would be a way to subdue tempers a bit. By having a party, which had an organization and an infrastructure and a personality that had a platform and issues. It would be a way of drawing people together from a wide variety of backgrounds and not make it so much about the individual, to make it about something larger or something bigger. So that was his great achievement, I think, his great contribution to America's political life, that political parties, and I always have to throw in for better and worse, because parties have been a destructive force as well as a positive force in American life.
Sure.
But on the whole, I think they have also had this leveling effect. And it starts during Van Buren's time. He is the principal advocate for political parties. So that's really one of the great topics of my book, you know, how parties came to dominate in America's political life. And it was a reflection of his personality, his belief that we need to sort of sublimate the individual and focus more on the larger, greater good of society.
Yeah. No, that great point, because I think that is the theme as I got, you know, further into the book, you know, that was a constant throughout is how he was able to bridge gaps. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, your host. This is this week's edition of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author and educator James Bradley. His new book is a marvelous biography on Martin Van Buren, our eighth president, and a man that was really, as they say, the little magician. Jim, going back to what you were talking about, throughout the book, there is this constant theme, you know, human rights then and now was certainly a very contentious topic, and he knew that, you know, coming in there heavy-handed was not going to win a lot of votes. It wasn't going to be able to bring, as you said, parties together. He just had a knack for doing that. But that was indeed what people recognized about him. And those were the things people admired about him. And those were the same things that got him where he got. So you would have thought it would have rubbed off, but he seems to have been in a class all by himself.
Yes. And the business about him being admired and respected, that's true. But at the same time, he also was a deeply, deeply polarizing figure. And it's mostly got to do with his connection to Andrew Jackson, which is, of course, a big part of my book. When in 1825, he decides that Andrew Jackson is going to be the face of this new party he is trying to form. And he approaches this subject with some reluctance because there was a principle at this time, and it was one he believed in strongly. He said a party should be principles, not men. That was a big, big creed of theirs, that a person should not be the dominant force of a party. It should be principles that the American people can support. All the same, he recognized something, that America was changing rapidly, that more and more people were given the right to vote. Now, of course, this is only white men, but for a long time, it was only propertied white men. Those property qualifications were dropping all throughout the country, including his home state of New York. More and more people are voting, and as these changes are coming in, Van Buren is recognizing, well, how do we harness this strength? How do we harness this new energy and political participation? And he said, we have to build a party, but at the same time, we do need someone to represent that party. He had been ambivalent about Andrew Jackson in 1824, but in 1828, when that election comes around, he becomes Jackson's campaign manager. And he really is the principal force to get him elected president. They didn't really have the term campaign manager back then, but he was the de facto campaign manager. He was traveling around the country, drumming up support, raising money, heading committees that coordinated with other state committees. Remember, this is the 1820s. It was an entirely different world. Everything was done through writing letters, so you could imagine how fraught that could be.
Right.
But all the same, he was able to pull this off and create what was really the first modern political campaign in American history, the election of 1828, where Andrew Jackson routs Massachusetts' own, sorry, Massachusetts, John Quincy Adams in a stunning victory. And then from there, he plays a pivotal role in shaping the administration. So through that whole process, he earns the real enmity of the opposition, headed by not only John Quincy Adams, but Henry Clay, Daniel Webster, another great figure from Massachusetts. So they're the face of the opposition. So even though they like Van Buren personally, they think he has introduced something destructive in American life by having a party that built around patronage and making Andrew Jackson such a powerful force in American politics. They thought he was, they called him King Andrew. They thought he exceeded his constitutional authority in the bank war and other the great powerful events of his administration. So it was a very controversial time, which is why Van Buren was such a controversial figure.
The other thing is, as I was listening to you, because it resonated with me as well, is you were exactly correct. We didn't have 24/7 news cycles. There were no TVs. There was no radio. And yet, many times, someone would hear a speech that he was given. Someone would see something that he wrote. And before you know it, it seemed to spur interest, not only in him, but the topic at hand, what he was trying to convey. And I thought, you know, at a time when communications was nowhere near where it is today, he certainly caught people's attention, whether it be a local newspaper, a regional newspaper, a letter that he wrote, and it caught the attention, again, as you've talked about, whether they're polarizing or not, people that were the movers and the shakers of the time. So kudos to him, because again, he wasn't, unlike today. I mean, they're not trained in public relations, not trained to be, great orators. And yet he certainly got his point across. Again, I get the sense that throughout the book, these were things that he recognized in himself. I think he understood that, you know, we all have limitations, but we all have strengths, and I've got to use mine to the max to be able to get anything done and accomplished. And obviously it did, right?
Yes. A lot of this comes from his background in training as a lawyer, because he was very good in negotiation, backroom negotiation. He was very good at being persuasive. He could get to the point. He could express himself clearly. He just had this terrific knack for taking people who could be completely against something and spend 5 minutes with Martin Van Buren, and all of a sudden they're saying, yeah, you're right, I never thought of it that way. It was quite a gift that he had. But you mentioned the party newspaper, and I think that was something that really flourished like never before in Van Buren's time, that the party newspaper, which not only covered the news, but it would have speeches that their favorite politicians made. They'd give you the speeches in full on the Senate floor. So the way people were engaged in politics, and if you lived in the D.C. area, they would come to the Senate just to hear people speak, because this was called the Golden Age, where people like Henry Clay and Daniel Webster and John C. Calhoun had these great commanding presence. They were really gifted speakers, and the acoustics were incredible. And so it was an event that people would go and hear people speak. And then for someone like Daniel Webster, people would follow him around Massachusetts when he was on circuit duty. They just wanted to follow him, to go hear him speak in court, because he was such an incredible and powerful speaker. It was an attraction all on its own. It didn't even matter what the case was about, just to see him in action, to see someone who was they never had any personal interaction with, was an event in itself. So the way people were engaged in politics back then, even though they didn't have the kind of technology we have today, in many ways they were more engaged, because they could follow the issues very closely, and they had a real personal connection.
I was just going to say exactly. It was the you know, the moment, that moment when that particular individual could gather a crowd and mesmerize them with their oration, with their ability to be so eloquent as speakers, really stood out. And I almost believe that people actually got more out of those speeches than the way some of it is delivered today, because there are just so many networks and so many ways of getting information, and you have so many points of view. This way, you heard it as to coin the phrase, you heard it from the lion's mouth. We've got a few moments left. Let me ask you, because I want to get to the culmination of Martin Van Buren's life, and that was as President of the United States. After writing the book, the research that you did, I mean, we can all draw our own conclusions, but you wrote the book and you did the real intense research on his life. Would you assess that this individual, Martin Van Buren, as one of the great presidents of this country?
No, not even close. As I said in the book, and I've been saying in appearances I've been making, he did not lead a consequential presidency, but he led a very consequential life. Now, why did things go so badly during his presidency? On one respect, it's things beyond his control. The economy collapsed, and the economy collapsed for a variety of reasons, but had to do with the trade with Great Britain and Britain calling in loans that American businesses could not pay back. Had to do with Andrew Jackson's controversial economic policies that really hamstrung the American economy when Van Buren came to power. And he was always had this delicate balancing act. He didn't want to anger the Jacksonians, his people, but at the same time, he had a country to run, and he was never able to find that right balance. So the American economy really went into a downturn when he became president. We call it the panic of 1837. And we say panic now because people were actually panicking. They were panicking because they were in the streets banging on the bank's doors to try to turn in their paper money for coins, and banks turning people away. So there was that. But he just really wasn't suited for this. It's a rich irony, I think, in the story that this man who invented the party system, the man who was such a powerful politician who waited his whole life to build himself up for this moment, when he got there, he found himself kind of ill-suited for it.
Yeah.
He just wasn't this dynamic personality on the level of an Andrew Jackson that people had come to expect by this stage.
Yeah.
So it was, and then, 1840 comes around, and the opposition, the Whig Party, they take a lot of the Democrats' election practices and campaign methods, and they kind of turn the tables on the Democrats, and that leads to a spectacular victory in 1840. So not a good presidency at all, but overall his life is one, I think, which is not only a rich story, but we learn a great deal about our country, about how politics were changing rapidly.
I got to say, that was the sense that I got too. I mean, I enjoyed the book thoroughly because he coming from nothing and the things that he did do, the way he worked, as you said, the party, and the way he was able to bring different points of view together, and yet you would think, then he's bound to be a success, and when he hits the pinnacle, the brakes go on. But nonetheless, a great, great story. Martin Van Buren, one of this country's presidents, and his life and the circumstances surrounding that life, well worth reading. Jim, real quickly before we go, people want to reach out to you directly. I know the book is widely available, but if they want to pose questions to you, because I know you do a lot of speaking events and you have a online presence, how might they do that?
Right now, I'm most active on Blue Sky, the hot new social media platform. So it's James M. Bradley on Blue Sky. And I certainly list events that'll be taking place. And so that's probably the best way to contact me right now.
Great. Again, the book is Martin Van Buren, America's First Politician. My guest has been James Bradley. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, this is Al Vona for The Public Eye. Thanks for being part of the WICN family.